Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. B. Brown, the German pharmaceutical and medical company, is in town right now in Malaysia and, of course, in the studio. They employ more than 60,000 people. They have been in this country for quite some time now. Joining us is the president of B. Brown Asia Pacific, Lam Chee Hong. Chee Hong, thanks for taking the time to come over and speak with us. In case people are unfamiliar with B. Brown, maybe you can talk to us in terms of the background of the company, the history of it, and perhaps the involvement of B. Brown in Malaysia.
Thank you, Ibrahim, for having me. Thank you and good morning to all. B. Brown is a German company which was started way back in 1839. Started off as a small pharmacy in a small town called Melsungen. Mm-hmm. It has more than 180 over years of history, and it's family-owned. Right now, it's the sixth generation of shareholders who is running the company. We are basically into manufacturing and selling products, med tech products, as well as pharmaceutical products.
Med tech meaning medical
devices, equipment, consumables.
And the involvement in Malaysia?
Well, B. Brown started shop in Malaysia, setting up its own manufacturing base way back in 1972 in Penang, Free Trade Zone. Today, or last year, we celebrated the 50th anniversary of our presence in Malaysia, which coincides also with the 50th anniversary of the Penang State Industrialization Plan.
So that means you were among the first companies, if not the first company, to set up shop there in the Penang industrial area.
Yes, we are the first medical device company that set up shop in Penang way back in 1972.
Amazing. And of course, right now in Malaysia, how many people do you employ? And the base is still in Penang, I suppose.
The base is still in Penang. We are employing about close to 7,500 people. And Penang is also the headquarters for Asia Pacific.
So what would be some of the things that you are doing in Penang? Is it production? Is it R&D? Is it product testing? Is it product discovery or innovation and research is done? Talk to us through the process of products being done there.
Sure. When we first started our manufacturing base, we were producing surgical instruments. We are still producing surgical instruments. And these are the instruments, the scissors, the forceps, that's used in the operation theatres. Then we are into pharmaceutical. We are producing all these large volume infusions, you know, the saline and the dextrose that you find commonly found in hospitals. In 2014, we set up the first centre of excellence for a range of products which we call intravenous accessories. The biggest product or the most important product in this range is the IVC, or commonly known as intravenous catheter. When someone is admitted in a hospital, the drip is going through a tube, and that piece of needle into the vein, that's called an intravenous catheter.
Okay. I get that all the time whenever they say, or start a line, right?
You need an access into the vein, and that's what we produce in
and they will sellotape the thing on the...
Yes. Now, interesting to note is B. Brown is the first company in the world that came up with a first plastic cannula way back in 1962. In the past, they were using stainless steel needle, which is, of course, traumatic and it's not comfortable. Uh-huh. So B. Brown came up with the first plastic IV cannula in the world.
Mass
in
adoption is widely used, right?
Widely used now, and every company is now using.
When was this introduced, this plastic IVC?
1962.
Oh, wow.
First in the world.
Oh, okay.
So in 2014, we set up a center of excellence where we produce IVC or intravenous catheters for the world. And this is an end-to-end, which means it has got R&D, manufacturing, right up to export.
Okay.
So as of July last year, we have produced and sold more than 5 billion pieces out of this factory in Penang.
5 billion?
5 billion
pieces. Exported around Asia.
Exported not only Asia, throughout the world. We are one of the only two sites in the world for the B. Brown Group that produce IVC.
The other one being
in the US, smaller site.
So the Penang one is really the bigger one?
Really the big one. It has, we have the full-fledged R&D center doing research and development for this range of products. Mm. We hire about 150 people, just scientists, and just doing R&D.
Are they local? Are they international?
Well, I'm very glad because that's a very good question, because out of the 7,500 people, about 99% are locals.
About 99% are locals?
Yes.
But what about the R&D people?
Mainly are locals. A lot
really?
Of
them.
Yeah.
That's something else, man.
There's something else.
So you were talking about med tech, and while IVC is indeed a very important medical device, where's the technology devices then?
The technology, of course, came from Germany, but now with our R&D, we develop new products for the world. Of course, with collaboration with the global organization, but all the work are done out of Penang.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And we are very proud of this because most of the people working there are Malaysians, and they are top-notch graduates from universities, so, local and abroad.
So your stakeholders, I'm presuming the Minister of Health, folks like the Medical Device Authority, for instance.
Yes.
What would be some of the other stakeholders that you are dealing with right now, locally?
We have, of course, MITI, MIDA, Penang Invest, the state government. We have very, very strong collaborative effort with all the stakeholders. Mm. And I must say the government has been very supportive of us.
What about market penetration for some of your medical devices? Is it considered a majority of penetration, or are you still competing with some of the bigger players out there?
Well, depending on the areas and the type of products, of course, there are always opportunities for growth. Mm. We can't win in all fronts. Mm. We are constantly looking for opportunity to collaborate with hospitals and customers.
Yeah. Still sticking with the Penang plant, there are plans right now on enlarging your production line, introducing new product portfolios, strengthening automation, and perhaps bringing more Industry 4.0 elements into your production plants. Talk to us to that effect.
Yes, we started already. We actually in the midst of implementing 4.0, Industry 4.0. Of course, there are still some work to be done. Mm. It involves a lot of effort, of course. So the R&D is the brain behind this. We have total manufacturing various kinds of products. What we are looking at, every year we are investing about 100 million just on upgrading capacity expansion, and this year we have slightly increased that. We're probably to a tune of about 200 million. Mm. And we are also...
All this in ringgit lah.
Ringgit. We are also investing capacity in R&D. Mm. Capacity in R&D because this is too important for us.
Can you share a percentage of revenue on R&D?
Globally, we are doing about 3-4% of the global revenue.
Okay.
So into R&D, but because we have a very wide range of products, we have.
I would assume, yeah.
We have 16 therapy fields. Our products are involved in 16 therapy fields, 5,000 products, 120,000 articles. Oh. So it's a very big range of products.
Is that the way forward? Or do you feel that a company like yours should streamline some of the products, reduce the, I don't know, you call it SKUs or something like that?
That's a very good question. The company has always been like that.
Yeah.
And it is a boon and a bane, actually. Because during the COVID, some products were sold exceptionally well that are related to infection control, vaccination. But on the flip side was that the elective surgery was down completely.
Yeah.
So our instruments were not able to, you know, there were demand were low. But that kept us going.
Okay.
That kept us going. So we have the contingency built into that, maybe not by choice. You know, over time we found out that we had this contingency that able to sail us through the pandemic, actually. Mm. But to your question, do we keep it like that? Yes and no, because we also learn a lot from the pandemic. Too many products are so difficult to manage. So we're in the process of sort of streamlining some of the portfolio and expand again the other portfolio. So it's again back to, we still have all these 16 therapy fields.
What about amalgamation of some of the products? Is that something that is happening in your industry?
Yes.
I.e., you have three products, actually can be amalgamated into one. You don't necessarily have to give all three. Something like that, where you streamline some of the product
Yes and no,
choices.
Because if you're talking about, let's say, stands.
Ah.
Yeah? Truck-coated. Mm. Balloon or truck-coated. Mm. Truck-eluding stands.
Mm.
It's good that we just focus on three articles, for example.
Mm.
But when someone goes to the cath lab, when a patient enters a cath lab, the cardiologist actually must have the whole array of sizes in order to be able to
cater to the patient. Yeah.
So there will be invariably some fast-moving sizes, but also some slow-moving sizes. But you need to have that. So it's a question of having that ready for the clinician to do his work well.
Mm. Let's talk about the Center of Excellence on Production Management right now. I'm pretty sure that your COE is trying to build your devices in a streamlined manner, reduce cost, improve efficiency, and also try to see how you can reap from the greater amount of R&D that is currently happening in your plant there in Penang. What would be some of the elements right now when it comes to the COE or the Center of Excellence in trying to get the best out of your products and, of course, what the market needs right now?
Yeah, so it all starts from what the market needs, like you rightfully pointed out. So we have very intensive engagement with stakeholders, with customers, with hospitals, to identify areas that we could be of help,
mm-hmm.
to identify pain points that the product could be able to serve and to alleviate in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So our new products are looking into also new technologies. Efficiency is, of course, because of the size that we have and the investment we had over the years, we had gained a certain degree of efficiency. But efficiency, it's a journey. Every day you keep squeezing out, you know, efficiency and keep sweating the assets.
Unless there's a shock to the system, i.e., say, for instance, the COVID-19 pandemic.
Precisely.
And then, of course, just like a lot of companies, I'm sure you guys have pivoted or at least streamlined some of the processes during the pandemic. Maybe you can talk to us in terms of the COE and then the pandemic and what learnings in specifics can you share with us on making the company a little bit more productive?
Yeah, so during the pandemic, as I mentioned just now, the demand of some products went down, especially products that are related to elective cases and in the wards.
Mm.
But for products like IVC was in great demand during the pandemic because there were patients in the ICU and there were patients in need of drips. So that went through the pandemic. So we had to deliver during the pandemic to the whole world because the demand was there. And imagine all the issues and challenges that we faced during the pandemic, logistics and container was missing, no shipping.
Basically trade. Supply chain issues.
Basically supply chain issues. So we had to air freight some of these products out to the world at very high cost.
Yeah, I was about to say that, yeah.
Unfortunately,
these
are essential products. And we have to live our mission to protect and improve the health of people around the world. So we had no choice to air freight. And we absorbed this. We managed to pass some of to increase the prices wherever we can, but by and large, our customer also understood that, you know, it's not by choice.
Mm.
So learning from the pandemic, we have to be more efficient. We built over the years during the pandemic some redundancy into the systems.
Oh yeah, to ensure that
on one hand we are efficient, but on the other hand, on the stocks and inventory, we built forward, build redundancy in the system. So they'll be able to cater for surge, sudden surge or sudden demands in the market.
Should it happen again?
Should it happen again?
Actually, it will. We just don't know.
It's a lot of uncertainties, Ibrahim, that at the moment, you know, COVID taught us one thing, all the assumptions, all the forecasting tools.
No, the next big pandemic is just around the corner. We don't know when. How long is the corner? Right? Precisely. Is it 40 years from now? Is it 4 weeks from now?
Precisely. Precisely.
Okay, you were talking about some of the R&D that is currently being done. Maybe you can share with us, I don't know how much you can share though, in terms of some of the exciting products that is going to be looked at. And perhaps when you talked about how Industry 4.0 is being done in your company, to what extent, maybe you can share with us some examples or case studies on that one?
So we were one of the first companies that introduced an IVC, safety IVC.
Okay.
What is a safety IVC? You know, IVC, when it is removed, when the vitreous puncture is done, you remove the contaminated needle.
Yeah.
And that's
yellow
dropped.
Bean. Yeah.
The contaminated needle has a sharp edge. Now, research has shown that this is one of the prime cause of needle stick injury.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The IVC?
Yeah. The
not
the
syringe,
sharp tip. The sharp tip, you know. Oh. You know, at every occasion where people remove and you just turn around and you...
And you stab somebody.
It happened, and it's real cases. So we were one of the first companies that came up with a protective device for that once it is removed, when the needle is removed, the device goes into action. It just basically...
caps the thing.
So it is to prevent needle stick injury. And all done out of Penang.
Mm.
You know, so those are an example of a new innovation that we introduced to the world.
Mm.
Of course, I can't share too much at the moment, but that's been done.
No, but yeah.
The new ones are coming with new technologies, of course. You know, we are looking at some of the new technology that we can, like coating of the cannula to prevent or to reduce infection. Some of the ideas that we are looking at. And we are also looking at implementing some bit of digital elements into the product.
Yeah. It seems that you're doing this with a lot of restraint because you don't want to give out trade secrets.
Yeah, I hope you understand my position.
No, I understand. But of course, these are much more exciting. Let me rephrase my question then. In the realm of healthcare, the innovation in healthcare has always been led by pharmaceutical companies and medical device companies like yourself and other pharmaceutical companies out there. But what comes to follow is the adoption or the mass adoption of these kind of either drugs or medical devices in the market. Where is the trend moving forward? COVID-19 has taught us so many things, but do you feel that research and innovation is now given such greater priority to a point where your industry is now being appreciated by outsiders, by government, by policymakers, by media? Do you feel that now this is the moment for your industry to shine and perhaps share a little bit more in terms of what you do to the market, so the market is a little bit more appreciative on the efforts that you're doing right now?
We have the industry certainly over the pandemic period has played a large role, a very important role. Innovation is certainly something that most companies are looking into. And with that, bringing in new technology. One out of four people in Asia will be more than 60 years old by 2050.
Mm. Okay.
60% of diabetics are actually in Asia.
Yeah.
So the chronic diseases are on the rise.
Yeah. Not because of NCDs.
Because
one in four Malaysians above 18 are diabetic.
So there you go. So the demand for healthcare will be a surge in Asia. And more so with the rise of middle income within the population. So the demand for healthcare, I believe, will be tremendous, at least in Asia. But with that also has its own challenges because most of the countries in Asia, except for a few, are still facing the challenge of access to healthcare, to equitable healthcare.
Would you consider Malaysia as one of those?
Yeah. The ratio of beds to population, the ratio of doctors and nurses to population are still way below some of the more advanced countries. That shows also the demand for healthcare will be something that is going to...
Doesn't this frustrate you? Because, I mean, a company like yourself is in Malaysia, and yet you're looking at your own environment here in Malaysia, you're looking at your own locality, and Malaysia still has low bed-to-patient percentage. Access to specialists, some specialists like psychiatrists, for instance, is very low when it comes to one psychiatrist to X number of population. That's one of the lowest. I don't have the numbers on top of my head, but yeah, where do you think this is going to move forward? Better policies, more money should be given to healthcare? How do we move forward on this?
With Malaysia, the budget for healthcare, 36 billion, is about 4% for one GDP? Something percent of the GDP. If we benchmark against the first world country, of course, there's still some way to go. But you can't from here to there in a short period of time.
Yeah.
So we've got to work within the resources. And to your question, I think that is a challenge for the medical device companies because it sort of gives us a reason to do better in the way we produce new products. You talk about shortage of manpower. So that would actually give us an idea, what do we need to do to have products that are easy to use? There are products to help solve problems where, you know, in the clinical setting, you don't have enough manpower. Products that are safe, that the clinician will trust. So to your question, that to us, that's something that we need to work on. So the R&D is actually looking at these pain points. How do we come up with better products?
Do you feel that the R&D process can be improved now that Industry 4.0 is in play? There's a lot of automation, there's a lot of AI, I suppose, in terms of how you craft new items.
Yes.
Will things be faster, I suppose, in terms of solutions?
Yes, of course. And we are constantly looking to challenge the R&D process because the go-to market strategy has to be shortened. Especially if you have a good idea, if you have a good product, that has to go to the market because it's actually resolving problems that some of our customers face.
Some reports have shown 55 billion ringgit has been spent into this company since its inception. And 100 million and 200 million from 100 to 200 million. These are sizable investments.
Sizable.
Do you feel that that's the only way forward for a company like yours at the forefront, at the edge, precipice of this healthcare industry?
Unfortunately, investment is something that we cannot run away because...
More and more, I suppose.
Because medical devices, for example, are going through very stringent surveillance and very stringent registration. We need to prove the efficacy of the product. Way back in 2018, 2019, we set up a global testing center in Penang. And these are basically equipped with state-of-the-art testing equipment to run a lot of tests on safety and efficacy of products, on product discovery, even running failure analysis.
What does that mean? Sorry, I'm not familiar.
You test a product and see at which point does it fail, you know.
Oh, I see. A stress test.
Stress test. And all this is to fulfill the European medical requirement, that registration, EU MDR.
Okay.
Because we have to ensure the safety for the patients and to the clinician as well. So this cost
all this is
can't
run out of
be
Penang.
Avoided. Yeah, out of.
It can't be avoided.
It can't be avoided.
In fact, I think more...
There's no shortcut, Ibrahim, unfortunately. There's no shortcut.
Then, of course, the last stage of the thing, which is the sales part. Talk to us through the sales element. Is it getting more difficult in terms of trying to get your salespeople out there and make it work?
Of course. Well, if you have a good product to sell, of course, it's
easy to close.
It's easy to close, yeah. But it's not about selling the product. It's about defining the value of the product and how the product will help the clinician and the hospital in their processes, and that's more important.
But everywhere around the world, healthcare cost is rising without exception. When you look at inflation segments, healthcare is always the highest, if not food. These kind of cost pressures that is happening around the world, I'm not just talking about Malaysia, but around the world, it must have put some stress into your industry, right?
Of course.
You have to make sure that you're hiring the best people out there.
Yep.
You're going to spend more in R&D or else you're going to lose out from your competitors.
Yep.
And then selling price, how you manage that, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm. That's also a very good question. That's an everyday challenge for us. The reason why I stress on value is because I think we have to be very transparent with the cost.
Mm.
If we are very transparent with the cost and we agree on the cost of a certain procedure, then we are able to look at beyond just the price of the product.
Mm.
Because sometimes a product may cost slightly higher, but it has it reduces certain other
basically
hidden costs.
The value is there.
So I think if we, and I also know for a fact that several countries are, Ministry of Health in several countries are actually looking into the value. How do you define value of the products and the process?
Okay. Final question is on the ESG element. I'm sure that you're looking at minimizing your carbon footprint. It is a German company after all. We're looking at reducing environmental impact. Talk to us to that effect.
We have a global target of reducing our carbon footprint by 50% in 2030.
That is so ambitious. I don't know how you're going
to... And I have to... I must say, and we are proud to report in Asia, at least in Penang, we are slightly ahead of that target. We will get there. And we have 6 work streams looking into ESG topics related to also with our vendors, an interface with the customers. We have at least 3-4 projects working with the customers, because this is not just one entity, the effort of one entity. It has to be a collaborative effort with all the stakeholders. So we're working with the customers on several projects to reduce carbon footprint. We are working on defining the carbon emission at the product level. And all these inputs are also going into the R&D.
Does this mean that poorer countries would have a greater difficulty in terms of trying to secure greater products or products with higher value, because there's also the ESG element, there's also the cost element, there's also the value element. So rich countries, even middling countries like ours, would be okay, have access to great products like B Brown offers, but cheaper, poorer countries might not necessarily have that kind of access, I suppose.
The discussion on ESG and price is a very interesting one that we have with our customers. On one hand, we all know that we need to go via this route.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's not going to be cheaper. So initially,
absolutely,
it will have to be. So it is, again, a collaborative. How much can we take and how much would the customer willing to pay? So it's constantly a discussion and a conversation.
It's tough,
not
right?
easy.
Not easy.
But we will get there.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. That was Lam Chee Hong, the president of B Brown Asia Pacific. If you want to learn more, just head on to B Brown's website. There's also resources like this can be found on Astra One. You can learn more there as well. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.